Today is January 4th, 2018, and this is episode number 495 of the Apple Context Machine. Now, that's a podcast, theoretically. For the Mac Observer, I'm Brian Chaffin, editor-in-chief of TMO. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM for full show notes. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note over at facebook.com/groups/contextmachine. Now, today, Apple has left me no choice, I say, but to bring John Keat back to the ACM guest host chair. CEO Tim Cook issued a rare warning to investors that his company had missed its revenue guidance. And if that's not a subject for me and John to chew on like the mangy junkyard dogs that we are, never was there such a topic. Now, you may know Mr. Keat from such podcasts as this one, Pop.0, and even a stint on TMO's Daily Observations. But I know him as a man of rare hyperbole, rancor, and an absolute sense of his own convictions, and everyone else be darned. And with that, I present to you John Keat.
I've been biting my tongue. I feel like I'm guest hosting with four Michigan J Frog. You're going to burst out into "Hello, My Baby" any second here.
Hello, my baby.
How you doing, Brian?
I am good.
As am I.
I am good. Yeah. It's been a short week, and then Tim Cook had to make it all exciting, like in an interesting, in a Sun Tzu kind of way.
I guess, you know, it's kind of boring news, to be honest with you. It's more just the blogosphere just lost its mind and overreacts, which is, wow, a shock.
You're the king of over. What are you talking about? Where is this moral high horse coming from? You're like the king of overreacting to all of the things.
Whenever I overreact, it's well warranted. Everyone else does it wrong.
Let's see. What did I say?
I'm glad we've established that.
Absolute sense of his own convictions and everyone else be darned. I think I nailed that. I think I nailed that, John. Oh,
are you going to throw a rock right through that glass pane right there?
Yeah, well, you know, I will risk my house shattering around me. Yes.
Okay.
I will risk
that. Fair enough.
So
what's topic one other than our banter?
Well, topic one is Tim Cook's Tim Cook's 1,400-word letter to investors that I summarized. How did I summarize? Let me find. This being ACM, I don't have anything ready.
I loved you. You had the best summary of every single journalist, blogosphere, pundit, pendant out there, all combined, couldn't hold a candle to your summary. I think yours was the best and most apt and succinct.
Let me actually find, when was that? That was the third, right? And that was the end of the third. There we go. Let's see here. Quote it verbatim, please. I will quote it verbatim. Apple issued a rare revenue warning on Wednesday after the markets closed. In a long letter, CEO Tim Cook told investors in Wall Street that blah, 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 China, blah, 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 we expected some of this, blah, blah, blah.
There you go. What more do you need to know?
Well, so one of the things that you noted in one of your chat groups is the difference between Tim Cook's letter, and that letter just infuriated me, to be honest.
What parts of it infuriated you, and why?
It was mostly the blah, blah, blahs. it was all the excuses. It was all of the, this isn't our fault. It was all of the deflection and defensiveness. It was a defensive letter. He doesn't need to be defensive.
And apologetic. It was very apologetic.
Well, I get being apologetic to investors because, you know, they're investors.
Yeah, because Steve Jobs was so apologetic.
Well, but still, I at least get where that comes from. But so, like, you and I have differing, ever less differing opinions about Tim Cook. But we have differing opinions.
Yes, the dark side.
We have differing opinions about Tim Cook. But I believe that you would agree with me, he really has no reason to be defensive.
No, it's a freaking great quarter. Only the lunatics in this press could play this out. There is so much lying, deceitfulness, hiding the ball in the analysis of this performance.
Oh, come on, hold on, man. Don't start dumping on the press. Apple missed its this was a big deal. Apple missed its own revenue guidance. It hasn't done that. It hasn't done that since long before the Oppenheimer and Jobs regularly sandbagged, and then Tim Cook eventually stopped the sandbagging. Hmm. Right? Apple hasn't missed revenue in its own revenue guidance in 10, 12 years longer. So that was a big deal. It was a big deal.
Relative to what?
Relative to reality. What are you talking about?
No, relative to what? That it's rare for it to happen in the little world of Apple? Okay. It happens on Wall Street all the time.
Okay.
All the time. With far less good news, actually, in the in the reports of, hey, we missed revenues because of this totally unforeseeable thing.
Well, we missed
revenues because we decided that real keyboards and old operating systems are really the future of smartphones, right? So there are many different kinds of revenue miss reports that you could have. Some are actually pretty good, and Steve Jobs knew how to point out in 2002 when he missed revenues. Hey, actually, it's a good thing because the whole market's tanked and we're doing better than the rest of the market, and we got great stuff coming up anyway. So go jump off a bridge if you don't like
it. So you're defending you think that Tim Cook is doing a great job. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, sure, because of his deep pipeline, of course.
Well, okay, we're gonna argue about the pipeline later. We're going to argue about the pipeline later. I promise you we're going to argue.
Poorly communicated. Look, you're agreeing with me. You just hate the fact that you're agreeing with me. It was poorly communicated.
No, it absolutely was poorly communicated. I'm disagreeing with you on whether or not it's a big deal. For one thing, we have to take Tim Cook at its word that it's all China.
So, and there's been evidence to support that, and I agree. It's if he's lying, by the way, I mean, he's got real problems with that.
Yeah,
not only shareholders.
Okay, let me... You were correct to push back on me on that. I don't believe he was lying, and I'm certainly not suggesting he was lying. I'm saying that we do have to take him at his word that it was all China. But I would throw in on top of that, John, how much of their China problems was the fact that they ratcheted up the entry-level price to a new device by $50.
So
that could well have exacerbated problems in China.
I think... yes, but I don't think even if they maintained it at that previous price level, China had a huge downturn, and no one was expecting the downturn to be as bad as it was because of this trade war on high-end goods. That's the bottom line. And could someone now, with hindsight, everyone's a big smarty pants and say, well, we should have foreseen that. I'm like, no. I mean, now it's clear that could be happening with high-end goods. But before, when they made the forecast 90 days ago, it wasn't clear because China was still buying stuff, right? So this kind of...
Please acknowledge my point, though. That ratcheting up the Chinese consumers are very interested in not having last year's technology, and ratcheting up the starting price to get a new device could well have exacerbated. I'm not saying I'm not saying one way or another China shortfall.
I agree. It's basic economics. When you increase prices, right, you know, demand will go down, and by how much, it's always an interesting question. And maybe they went below a threshold. So it's even, I'll go a step further. It's even conceivable that the entire downturn was totally because of mispricing it. I don't actually believe that, but who knows?
No, I doubt that. But here's a point I made on Thursday morning's daily observations. And I had to keep circling back to it out loud before I finally realized that this is why I was so cranky about earnings shortfall, revenue shortfall, and that if Apple was firing on all cylinders, was regularly iterating on new Macs, wasn't looking to price increases to make up for flattening or even slightly falling iPhone sales, that I would have been not at all cranky about this particular announcement and probably would have been a big Tim Cook defender on it. And it's because of that greater backdrop that I am cranky about this announcement.
And you know, some people say that's unfair, but I think that's 100% fair. And the reason is, it's like many things in life, you know, drip, 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 one little thing, one little thing, one little thing. And at a certain point, people break, right? The straw that broke the camel's back. And so it's reasonable that you just have a psychological reaction at some point where, like, there's not enough things going right for me to be as defensive of Apple's performance. So that's fair enough. But I think it's still overdone. And, you know, I am no fan of Tim Cook, which not to say he's all evil and all bad, or but he's certainly not all good and all rainbows and puppies either. I think he's actually very bad at operations, which people assume he's good at. But before I go down there, I think, one, we can agree that the way it was communicated was bad, even relative to the 2002 Steve Jobs short and sweet. Hey, we missed, but so is the industry. We're actually doing better than the industry in this segment. And one thing I didn't hear other people in the Mac press or otherwise in the press mention, they mentioned his old 2002 statement. They dug it out and showed, you know, how nice and short and sweet it was.
It's two paragraphs.
Yeah, and it was generally words, I think. And beyond him being able to spin a negative into a positive, what he always said, if you remember during the interviews and during the keynotes during the downturns, and this was not the only downturn they lived through. They lived through the 2008 downturn. They lived through the dot-com bust, if you don't remember. And he had a common thread.
It came out stronger from both of those.
Every time.
Yeah.
Every time. And why? Because he came through with an offensive message, not a defensive message. He came out and said, when they were asked, well, how are you guys going to make it through this tough time? And he always says, we're going to innovate our way out of this.
Well, it's not just the message. It's also the execution, though. I mean, I know that's not what you meant. But
and unlike Tim Cook's deep pipeline, he didn't need a deep pipeline to innovate out of it.
All right, we're going to fight about the deep pipeline right now. Right now. You want the pipeline to be defined only by existing product lines, where you and I are in agreement that it's ridiculous.
In 2000, when the dot-com market burst, and he says we're going to innovate out of that, a mere year later came an iPod, and it took them 18 months.
9 months.
Well, it depends how you count it, but whatever. It's a short amount of time, not the kind of measured in stone strata levels of deep pipeline that Tim Cook is measuring in.
Okay, you are conflating the lack of iteration in the Mac product line in particular,
and then
stop. Would you stop? Let me get my point out.
Okay.
You are looking at the lack of iteration on the Mac side, which makes both of us cranky as can be, and doing things like, you know, not making Wi-Fi routers anymore, not coming out with a new mesh system, stopping making displays for some frickin' reason. And you're wanting that to be the proof in the pudding that there's no deep pipeline.
We disagree. That is part of it. But also part of it was that under Steve Jobs, they were much more nimble. They brought out an entirely new category and segment of the iPod in 9 months. They came from the iPhone to the iPad in a shorter amount of time. They just didn't need as much time to make significant upgrades on this. They came out with an app store from zero in 2007. And a year later, they had an app store. So they were able to do things and react. I still don't have menus in iOS. I don't have menus in free.
Okay, we're not going to even argue there either. My whole point, though, is that the deep pipeline that Tim Cook may be talking about, probably actually must be talking about, or he's lying.
You're wrong.
Are the products that we haven't seen yet.
You're wrong.
What? How? What? What are you basing that on?
Because his discussion of deep pipeline during interviews was always relative to other products that they were discussing at the time, the iPhone, iPads, and whatnot. And they'd ask him,
"Well,
you
know,
that since says me, that's what I noticed when he was giving those interviews. He would say, we've got a lot of good things coming down the pipeline in response to those questions. So is it conceivable that when they were talking
about the questions
about,
were always whether or not Apple was going to be able to do anything else? Like, you know, no, oh my God, it's been a year since you've come up with some groundbreaking product line. So, are your days of innovation over? I mean, I'm exaggerating, but not by much.
I agree that in some cases they were in the bigger sense of it, like when's the next iPhone segment, you know, kind of going to drop like that. But in other times it was just like, we've got a lot of good things coming on the laptop segment. We've got great things in our deep pipeline. And they don't. They just don't.
Well, okay. I completely disagree with that characterization. I have long assumed that I definitely did hope that the pipeline referred to the products that I wanted to see coming out, which includes new Macs. Uh-huh. And it clearly has not, right? I mean, I'm not arguing with you on that point, but I think.
Well, thank God, because you used to argue with me on that too.
Lies! Lies! Uh-huh.
Sure.
If Apple comes out with a new product line that at any point, that is essentially the proof in my pudding. And if they don't, it's the proof in your pudding. And the thing is, every single day, Your pudding looks tastier and tastier.
My pudding is really good because let me tell you. Let's say 5 years from now he comes up with something amazing. Do you think it's reasonable that when he was saying 5 and 6 years ago, currently today, from today,
yeah,
in another 4 years, that his top pipeline was 10 years old? I mean, at some point,
yeah. I think that he personally devalues Macs, and that's why they're not getting the attention they need. That we
Apple
want
them, doesn't care about the Mac at all. It's obvious.
Well, some people with an Apple do.
Well, as an institution, I have to look at their actions.
Well, I think that's flowing down. I think that's flowing down from the top, and I think that it's Tim Cook devalues Macs, and that's why Macs don't get the love that they deserve and need. And I think that he's got his eyes on these big moonshot products. And more importantly, I think that it also explains why he's able to keep the executive team together.
Your extreme defensiveness of your wrongness on the deep pipeline is detracted from the main point, which is when Steve Jobs says we're going to innovate out of these downturns, he innovated at all levels. At the big levels, at the medium levels, at the small levels, heck, even software got updated regularly, and iPods regularly, and everything
got
updated.
Products got abandoned under Steve Jobs all the time. Sure. All the time they got abandoned.
And yet,
languished and just sat there ignored because he didn't care about them. Like the only things that got attention under Steve Jobs were the things that Steve Jobs was personally interested in.
Which were many, a lot more than there are today. They were hitting on many more cylinders during Steve Jobs' 2007, time frame than they are today.
What about the big vision projects like non-invasive glucose monitoring, like healthcare records?
That is not
like we don't see those things.
Non-invasive glucose is not that big a deal.
Oh my God, are you kidding me?
Let me give my caveat for that. It is absolutely a big deal in the world of health, and it's absolutely a big deal with people, you know, improving their lives. It is not as much of a time sink as you're suggesting it is. I mean, self-driving cars is more of a technological time sink than the non-invasive glucose.
The medical industry has been trying to solve non-invasive glucose monitoring for decades.
That's like saying the telephone industry was trying to solve smartphones for a long time. Who cares? They're Muppets. They couldn't find, you know, the right end of a phone until, you know, Steve Jobs showed it to them.
The biomed industry is not Ma-Bell from 1964.
Please, if you knew the regulational nightmares and the things you have to deal with in one, hospitals, two, with doctors, and the self descriptions that doctors give to themselves as to their capabilities, especially with technology. They can't to this day. HIPAA doesn't work. They can't do simple encryption in a way that works. because they're all so incompetent in that industry.
That's different. That's different than solving non-invasive. Stuff. Oh man, what? Okay, okay. You're right. Just
we can agree to disagree. Yeah,
yeah, we're gonna have to.
Anyway, you're still defensively moved off of the point, which was every time Steve Jobs says we're going to innovate through these downturns, he innovated on many levels.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And he did in a much more short-term focus. Like Steve, in hindsight, it really appears that Steve was a lot more focused on what could be done in, say, the next 2 years, as opposed to what could be done in the next 5 to 10 years.
And he had both. He had both those stoves going right at the same time.
But his focus was the near term. His focus was on big change now.
They were working on the iPhone iPad for about, I think it was 6-ish years. Part of that whole experience was when they bought the FingerWorks guys. Remember that?
Yeah, that
was.
But that got ramped up. That got ramped up at a certain point. And when it got ramped up, Scott Forstall started stealing all the best people for it, right? That because he had Steve's blessing to do so, right? It vastly accelerated at that point.
Sure, but you know, my point is that he had some long term, things going and some shorter term things, and he was able to ramp things up when he decided it was time. Absolutely, all more supporting my point that Tim Cook is incompetent and he can't ramp anything up through his deep pipeline when it needs to be ramped up.
He's not incompetent. He's just not focusing.
He has failed at the very thing that he is supposed to be best at, which is operations. He has put all his operations into China. Apple is one...
That started under Steve.
What are you talking about?
I mean, like, so why are you blaming the Tim on that?
Because he's supposed to be the operational maven.
Tim was the person who stood up and said... Steve was the person who stood up and said, these jobs are never coming back. We can't do it. Steve was the one who said, basically, we can't have work camps in the United States anymore. So we're going to go build these things in a place where we can.
So he was company also the guy towns. Who said that there will never be a video screen on an iPod, blah, 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 blah. He says a lot of baloney stuff.
But that's not the same thing because the difference between the video iPod misdirection and the comments that Steve Jobs made about manufacturing in China is that the stuff about manufacturing in China is true.
Not necessarily, because you have places like Foxconn that have highly automated their factories to the point where there's like no one in them. And that's very doable here. And a lot of that technology for that robotization is actually come from Apple, who helps them develop that stuff.
And that's going to end up happening.
And you're leveraging off a very false dichotomy that you have to do it all there. If you had a factory in the U.S. that could, say, produce 5% or 10% of those units, and another one in Brazil, which actually failed to produce another 10%, another in Eastern Europe that could produce 10%, at least all your eggs are not in one basket. Apple is one patent injunction away from having the ability to produce no iPhones, period, worldwide, because it's all in China. And that takes maybe one on the merits injunction. But my point is, this started under Steve.
Why are you pinning this on Tim?
Because that doesn't make it right. He doesn't have to continue to do something that worked for 2007 to now.
I think that he's working on it. I think that all the stuff that they do with automation, the stuff that they do with Foxconn, trying to move stuff into Brazil, I think they're eventually going to be having...
I'm glad that you get to the work in the world of deep pipeline 20 years from now. I'm talking about the world today. And I'm talking about what he's managed to do.
The world today is Steve Jobs' making when it comes to manufacturing. My problem here, I agree with you about the issues of having all of your manufacturing eggs in China. It was always risky, but it was certainly profitable in the short term. I agree with the problems, and we haven't even gotten into the fact that Chinese manufacturers regularly steal from their Western companies that are hiring them.
Or I accept your multiple apologies.
But I'm not apologizing because you're saying that this is all Tim Cook's doing, and it's not. It's Steve Jobs' doing.
I did not say it's all Tim Cook's doing. I'm saying he's supposed to be an expert in operations, and he stinks at them because he's put all his operational eggs in one basket. All right,
Steve put them there.
Steve put them in there, and he hasn't figured out that maybe that's not a good idea.
Well, how do you know that? How do you know that they're not trying to extricate themselves from that? It's Steve who said this stuff has to stay in China. It's Steve that said we need company towns.
Steve, has said a lot of things. You know, you can.
That's different, man. It's different. Okay. It's different.
It's different. Steve has been dead for about 8 years. It's really different.
And during that time, for all we know, at the very least, Apple is working on this.
You know, maybe Apple's been trying to turn water into wine during this time. I really don't care because they haven't managed to do it. They can't release a Mac, and they haven't diversified their manufacturing capacity, period. It's the bottom line. They got a little plant in Ireland, thank goodness. I don't even know what they make out of there. They've got a microscopic plant in the U.S. that makes five-year-old Macs.
Look, there's at least 20, 40 machines that come out of that place every year.
And they had, they didn't have.
But they're very pretty. Every one of them is pretty.
It's very true. And Foxconn had a failed experiment in Brazil, but they shouldn't be relying on Foxconn.
What I think is going to end up happening.
What about the whole widget?
No, what I think is going to end up happening with manufacturing is that Apple is going to be one of the first companies that has entirely automated manufacturing back in the U.S. or perhaps in other parts of the Western world.
And it should be. It shouldn't just be in the U.S. or just in China. It makes it makes total sense to have to diversify. Okay,
that's another thing that because there are all kinds of things that are made in the U.S. today under Apple.
Sure, there are all kinds of chipsets and stuff that are still made. I read somewhere that the real tariffs that if the U.S. imposed on Chinese products coming in would affect the iPhone very little because the value added in China is not manufacturing. They don't make chips in China. Those are made in Taiwan and in the U.S., believe it or not. It's assembly, right? It's the human factor there. And that added up to something like $7 or $8 worth of added value in assembly. So that's what you would end up being tariffed on if there was some kind of import tariffs of iPhones coming in, right? In essence, the tariffs that China could put on the U.S., not all the chips come from the U.S. Obviously, they come from Taiwan and whatnot. But if they wanted to just target all the stuff that Apple uses, that would hurt them because you essentially have a lot more value produced by other countries other than China, and then they assemble it. So the tariffs really could hurt if they do that. And again, that's a problem when you have all your eggs in one basket. If China really wants to become antagonistic, and there is evidence they've already become rather antagonistic over a long time towards Apple, and particularly with this Hawaii or Highway, I don't know how you pronounce that.
Huawei.
Thank you. The Huawei company, because of the Canadian, holding of their executive and whatnot, it's a country that could turn on a dime and become very negative to Apple. It's bad that they have all their eggs in one basket. But anyway, again, you constantly are changing the subject from the real point because you're losing the real point, which is Jobs spun this stuff into positives. He said every time we had a downturn, we're going to innovate out of this. And he delivered on that, both in the short term and in long term ways. Tim Cook has not delivered on that pipeline since he started using it. It's just he hasn't. You know what? I'm lying. I'm being unfair. He delivered on AirPods, which are nice.
AirPods.
And he delivered on the HomePod 4 years late.
And Apple Watch.
And he delivered on the Apple Watch. That's what he delivered on. And those are great. And he failed miserably.
Apple Watch is a tremendous accomplishment.
Sure. But it's still not as big as the Mac, which he's completely failed.
Yeah. I agree with you on the Mac. And I don't understand it. Like, hire some people, make some new Macs. Just do it every year. Make some new Macs.
Anyway,
put new processors in those Macs. Put new GPUs in those Macs. change the form factor every 2 or 3 years. Just do it.
Yeah.
So I mean, like, seriously, just do it. It's not, I mean, like HP can do that. Dell can do that for FFS.
And Steve Jobs made a whole new product segment with the iPod in 9 months, and he needs more than 2 years to make a new Mac Pro since his acknowledgement of the failure.
Well,
it's a joke.
Okay, well, yeah, joke. On that though, if the delay, I don't think the delay is on the Mac. We talked about that. The delay, I don't think it's on the Mac. It's on the processor. That takes longer to develop.
We'll see.
That's the only thing. But if it doesn't,
that's still a mistake. In the meantime, just give us a freaking Mac that works. I don't need to wait for Godot because he wants to put periwinkle processors in it. I need a machine in the meantime. And in the meantime, all the
you can use iMac Pro users, and you'll like it.
No. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Let me pay you $4,000 for that soldered in piece of garbage SSD. But in the meantime, all the enthusiast and pro Mac users, I have, you know, not all, but a huge portion of them have left and they're never coming back. And all the enthusiasm, there's a ton of articles today, you know, the cult of Mac is dead because all the users are not feeling it anymore. Part of the reason is those hardcore users that you need to rely on in hard times, the company is treated like garbage.
Yeah, I agree with that. The pro, we're talking about the creator pros in particular, the high profile, the influencers, as it were.
The pros, and I'm going to change that because everyone likes to use that word pro, and they always think of like the Pixar people, and that's a part, definitely a segment, but it's also the enthusiasts. There was a definite hardcore group of enthusiasts that weren't necessarily, drawing and sketching things all day or doing web paste up, but they were super enthusiast, kind of prosumer level users that lived and breathed the Mac, and they were huge influencers, to your point. And they treated that group like pure garbage. You know, telling someone to pay $8,000 for a stupid laptop with 4 terabytes of soldered in, never to be upgraded memory is an insult to that group. It's an outright insult. Anyway, I guess I think we've killed that topic in that we both agree that the communication was poor. Steve would have definitely done it better. And you have really no counter for my point.
It was also
Steve innovated through every downturn and made the company better.
Okay. Well, fine. Whatever. The letter was defensive. It was unnecessarily defensive. It was embarrassingly defensive. And there was one thing that I meant to talk about on yesterday's TDO, mm-hmm. and did not, and now I have to find the.
And it wasn't just defensive; it also managed to bury what was a lot of good news year over year. There's still revenue growth.
He didn't need that. Yeah. He didn't need that good news. He didn't even need to mention any of that good news. The good news is what made it defensive. So here's the paragraph that really made me cranky. We can't change macroeconomic conditions, but we are undertaking and accelerating other initiatives to improve our results. That sentence right there is exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, Dobe did bad. Now we do good. Yeah, I mean,
no. It's not. We're basically saying that there's things that we can tweak to improve our results, not make new products.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So that first sentence. Yeah. Okay. Next sentence. One such initiative is making it simple to trade in a phone in our stores, finance the purchase over time, and get help transferring the data over the current to the new. Are you freaking kidding me, man? Like
well, taking your
like
used
that's
car?
That's what's gonna that's like. That's what you're touting as the thing that's going to improve results.
Right. Versus we're going to innovate out of this.
Yes. This is not only great for the environment, which is true. It is great for the customer as their existing phone. But just give me a break. I'm glad that they're doing that. That will reduce friction, right? That's a friction point that Apple can reduce. That is fine in and of itself, but that is not going to dramatically boost sales. It's going to eke out a little more profit from existing customers.
Yeah, it's all poorly communicated. Like I said, to me,
but it's not just poor communication, John. It's the message itself that he's being communicated sucks.
Right. And as an investor, when I look at this, I mean, I'm just buying more Apple at this point, which is crazy because I'm so over leveraged on Apple. But
I have a small holding, much smaller than yours, I'm sure. And just to get that out there for full disclosure. And if I had more cash, I would buy some more.
Yeah, because the news is great. They had record sales in almost every region. This to me is huge. I haven't really seen anybody write about this. Part of his stream of apologies in that letter was kind of the average time that someone holds onto the phone, particularly with the batteries now being more in the consciousness of people that you can just upgrade them and feel like you have a new phone, is that they hold on to them for 36 months, which is fantastic. One, because, you know, the phone is still good and relevant over that amount. And I'm not buying an Android phone and holding on to that long. But the point is that despite the long holds, they still had year over year growth and record activations, right? So that means with longer holds, they're still doing great. And the only the negative was kind of unforeseeable. So, the Chinese market had a downturn. The Chinese market is 20% of normally their revenue, and they're down 7% on the quarter overall, which means they killed it everywhere else. I mean, they didn't just do okay. They killed it everywhere else.
So what you're saying is that Tim Cook has executed brilliantly on operations?
Well, you know, in some ways, Tim Cook is the new John Sculley to me, and he just has a lot bigger bankroll than John Sculley did. John Sculley did great after Steve Jobs left, and he had the highest revenue, record revenues for Apple. But at
but there's a lot of not parallels between them.
Yes, true. But the big parallel is there's a lack of really execution. The biggest difference is John Sculley actually executed, right? If anything, they released too many Macs, too few iterations.
The big thing, I saw you make this point in one of your chat groups, but the biggest thing was not the too many Macs, because that accelerated under diesel. Right? Or the iron? What's the iron diesel? What was his name?
Yeah, you're right. You know what? I misattributed that. I was wrong on that.
But
you're right.
But Sculley's big mistake was in going strictly for the high end at a time when the entire rest of the market was lowering its prices.
Wow! Thanks for making my point.
What do you mean?
The price of Macs and everything else is too
beep 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 beep. Beep, 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 beep.
My, that's what I mean. I mean,
oh,
he's
man. Now I'm gonna have to edit.
All right. Well, my apologies. I don't remember what we were saying though.
All right. John was just naughty, and so I edited, and we lost our train of thought, and let's just move on to the next thing. Oh no! You were saying that I was making your point about Sculley.
Yeah, that basically you just said that, you know, he went too high end and the prices got too high at a time when prices were kind of, people are more price sensitive. So, you know, thanks for making my point.
Well, I think I have less of an issue with Apple's starting price on most of its devices. Mac Mini is probably too expensive than I do on their upgrade pricing.
Yeah, fair enough. But I mean, you can see
Apple's gross margins aren't jumping to 60%. If Apple's margins were jumping to 60%, then we could have a fantastic argument about how ridiculous the starting pricing is. It's the upgrade pricing that's outrageous, offensive, and insulting.
It's just like no analogies are perfect, right? The point is there are some similarities there. And the main similarity is that both were riding off of Steve Jobs' coattails of his innovations, and both, you know, failed to deliver kind of the things that that particularly the Mac people wanted. And in this case, I'm not going to say iPhone people want, because I think, you know, he's done a great job this quarter. Not this quarter, but basically with this last release of iPhones, it's maybe the most poorly named set of phones in the history of phones. their phone nomenclature is just bad, especially that Phil Schiller freely admits that all the thought he put in naming phones was, hey, I like sports cars, so I'm going to use their stupid letters to name these phones. That's brilliant. But in actual kind of I wish they had a more entry level phone than the XR as well, kind of like an SE2. But otherwise, they have a really good, you know, offering. I think the prices are in there with regard to the phones are too high. I think the XR
That's true. The starting level of getting into a new iPhone has gone up $100 in the last year, really in the last 14 months.
Yeah, and the XR should have been $100 cheaper at least. Yeah.
Well,
and if they made it $150 cheaper, it would have. I'm sure it did great, but it would have done even better.
I imagine that it would have needed to have something less in it to achieve that price. Because again, please note that their gross margins aren't skyrocketing.
Yeah, maybe it kind of gets to the article I wrote. You know, if they had an addition category of product, they could really fleece the people that want the kind of addition level of stuff, which would put a little less pressure potentially on people that wanted kind of the more mid and low range to make up. The addition line would make up for that potentially. But I don't know. I don't know what their costs are on that. The bottom line is it's a good set of features. I think it's well balanced and a great middle end phone, but it's not priced like a middle end phone. And maybe they should have gotten rid of something then to make it a middle end phone.
That would have been necessary. And I think that's what I personally believe that would have been a better move. But so, the thing is, here's the thing, John, this is much more in your camp than in mine. I believe that the 10R was envisioned to hit a price point rather than being envisioned to be a device into and of itself and then priced.
Yeah.
And Steve Jobs did the former. No, the latter. Apple under Steve Jobs made the device and then priced.
To some extent, but like the iMac, when he came back and made the iMac, it was definitely meant to be kind of the Volkswagen.
That's true. That's true. They had a target price, but they were trying to hit a target price that was low.
Yeah.
When you're trying to hit a target price that's higher, it's pretty easy to fill it.
Yeah, that's true.
And my point here is this whole notion that Apple has foreseen flat to slightly falling iPhone unit sales, and their solution to that is to jack up prices.
And their solution should have been to innovate out of it.
Correct. And come up with new products.
I accept your poem.
We've been on the same page on that. So
all right.
Well, you don't get your apology.
I don't know about that. I think you just refuse.
So now we have this macro situation, right? This macro situation where like they're one of the things tossed around to make Apple more nimble is to break it up.
Sure.
And then I asked you, what do you think about Apple going with a GM model where they're trying to make all of the things?
I think...
Not GM.
The conglomerate model. Yeah, like
no,
GM used to
be. No, I actually didn't mean GM. I meant GE. Yeah, GE is what I meant.
Yeah.
The GE model. So, like,
I like the conglomerate model more than the split model. In that, as a stockholder, I should want them to split it up because as soon as they split it up, I'm gonna make a ton more money because all the pieces will be valued higher than
But that's short term, and you happen to use the company's products too,
right? Well, less and less these days because that's not true. I'm still using them, but just it's the what I use tends to be more
you're ancient not, these days. You're not buying new ones.
Yeah, I would rather burn the money than give them $8,000 for their MacBook Pro. It's a disgusting device, in my opinion, but whatever. So, part of it is the ethos of the whole widget.
Hold on. I gotta go back. What did I call you? A man of rare hyperbole? Again, I think I nailed it. go ahead.
So, the ethos of the whole widget. Now, part of that, I wonder... I believe in it, and I think Steve Jobs was perhaps maybe the only person that could pull it off because I think he was able to reach into different divisions and make them bend and say, you will do this hardware, you will do this software, you will do this services, you will do this on the operating system side, and able to integrate it And I don't know if that's a fair burden to put on any other singular human being. And that might be why we're having all these failures of integration around the company to some greater degree than there used to be, because he was a person that was singularly capable of doing that. I don't know if others can.
Well, yeah. So put another way, Apple under Steve Jobs was a company of fiefdoms, but it was a fiefdom of one.
Yeah, right.
That's the danger of having divisions, is that places start becoming fiefdoms and people start defending their fiefdom. They start defending the power that they have with their product categories or you know, whatever it is that is their division. And that's typically speaking, normally the danger of having that sort of corporate setup.
True. And on the other hand, you know, we do have a little example of this, which is FileMaker. FileMaker gets updated regularly every year, right? It runs its own little division and it does its thing.
It's not even a division. It's a separate company owned by Apple.
Yes. And if they did the same thing with Macs, they would get updated regularly. And maybe that's fine. All they got to do is get it to, you know, work with iOS, I'm fantasizing there, with Mac OS, and otherwise they could be able to do their own things. Maybe they'd make a toaster fridge at this point and have touchscreen on it.
There you lose the whole widget.
And there you lose the whole widget. But to some degree, some people argue that we've lost the whole widget already because there's so much incoherent weirdness in what happens with the Mac. You know, random killing of features for no good reason.
Yeah, it's the other way around. It's that the Mac gets dumbed down rather than the Mac being able to thrive and excel. Yep. It gets dumbed down to, you know, to be subservient to iOS.
Yeah, so I think from a high level, it's an easy thing to answer. If you believe in the whole widget, you want to keep the company the way it is. And if you had to choose between the conglomerate model or the split up, you would choose at least the conglomerate model because there would be some level of control, at least theoretical, if not practical. Once the company split, I think each one could thrive, but they would start drifting potentially away from one another. And, you know, the crazy thing is Apple hardware is pretty good. And if you just put a touchscreen on it, it might run Windows better than any Windows machine. And they realize we make a lot more money doing this. So why don't we not give a darn about Mac OS? You could see something like that happening.
Yeah, you could see the Macintosh, Macintosh Incorporated, right? You could see that becoming like the world's biggest Windows hardware maker.
Yeah, people still like ooh and ah rightly about how good the trackpad works on a Mac, and for whatever reason, everyone seems to not be able to reproduce that elsewhere.
Because it's software too. I mean, the strengths of the Mac has certainly since Steve Jobs came back has always been the marriage of hardware and software.
Yep.
So you like, for instance, who makes Mac OS? Is it Macintosh Incorporated or is it Apple? And if there's an improvement in Mac OS, or an improvement in iOS, or a change in one or the other, like who's coordinating that? Who owns it? Who's, you know, who's keeping those things in sync? And the answer is probably no one.
Well, I guess that begs the question of if you had to split the company, whether by division or by independent company, how would you split them? Right. One would be an iOS business. One might be a wearables business. One might be a Mac business. One might be a services business, and then what? Everyone gets their own copy or fork of the operating system they need.
User, that's scary. As a shareholder,
they start to drift.
Yeah, exactly. Right? As a shareholder, that's like, oh my god, that's fantastic. And as a user, that just honestly, like, I felt, I mean, no exaggeration, I felt like a little queasy when you were saying that.
Yeah, and I guess the advantage of having a conglomerate do it is you could have one extra split, which is the operating systems business, right? Where it's just a common team doing that, and every one of them gets whatever they push out. You could still do even with a split company too. I don't know. Potentially,
let's explain.
You could see.
Let's explain the problem we're trying to solve by even discussing this.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem that we're trying to solve by discussing this is, like, in what, I mean, really what it is in what world can the Macintosh thrive again? Am I correct? Is that really at the heart of what we're talking about?
I don't think it's just limited to the Mac. It's limited to it's to letting Apple in all its segments and in the development of new segments thrive and regularly update. There's no reason why they could, if you had just a division that made nothing but great monitors or great Wi-Fi, there's no reason that Apple couldn't have its own Synology competitor that worked a billion times more easily and gave you a private cloud and gave you super Wi-Fi meshy stuff. If there wasn't someone on it to kind of update it regularly.
Right. And if there was a person whose livelihood depended upon iCloud thriving, you could guarantee that, you know, our $100 would get us, you know, multiple terabytes.
Exactly. Instead of, yeah.
And if there was someone whose livelihood depended upon Mac selling, you could guarantee that they'd have new Mac models every year. Every year, every model, every product category would get updates.
Yep. So, I mean, I think the gist of what you're saying is on point. It's what would either of these things help? Would either splitting the company or making it into a big conglomerate help for these independent arms to produce more regularly and more freely?
Yeah, and could this $300 billion, actually, it's not three, is it 300? What are they bringing in a year? It's close to 300, right? Let's just pretend it's 300 just for the sake of argument. And this is ACM, so precision is not our strong suit. Would this $300 billion a year company turn into a $400 billion or a $500 billion a year multiple companies?
Yeah. Well, on the other hand, could you imagine if you had an operating system division by itself? It would release it for Windows, for, you know, any Intel machine as well. So that would be interesting.
But again, the strength, and I know, by the way, you and I are not saying that we want Apple to start licensing.
No. But I mean, these are potential consequences, right?
Exactly. And I'm not really sure what that would look like. I mean, I have been my baggage that I bring into the discussion is that I spent most of my career as a journalist, an editor, and publisher grokking, defending, and espousing the whole widget model and lamenting the fact that the rest of the industry couldn't, the rest of the computer industry in particular, couldn't adopt the same model. And talking about how wonderful it would be if there were two or three whole widget companies going head to head in the computer space, and how much better it would be.
You kind of got your wish, right? You kind of have Surface now by Microsoft, which is kind of doing the whole widget, and you kind of have Google Phones and some of their Chromebooks where they kind of are doing the whole widget, and they've adopted that,
right? Because the underlying operating system is still also aimed at the broader licensing world.
True.
So, you know, it's held back by that. Think about how much better Google Phones could be if Google's only hardware customer was itself. And how much better, I'm sorry, Windows, I meant Android.
Mm-hmm.
How much better Android could be. Think about how much better Android could be if Google's only hardware customer was itself. And think about how much better. Did I say it right that time? Or yes. Did I say it wrong again? Great. And then how much better Windows could be if Microsoft's only hardware customer was itself. So we don't really quite. I mean, it's almost like not the worst of both worlds, but it's not the best of both worlds.
I guess I don't know how much better it could be. I mean, part of it is just, you're expending a lot of additional resources on making drivers that are compatible with all kinds of other schlock that you don't necessarily want to work with.
And all the software overhead that goes along with that.
Right. I mean, does that really impact the same people that are kind of doing the grand strokes of here's what the user interface should look like and what, you know, how people should interact with it? I don't know. Maybe it does. Maybe it doesn't. So I don't know that it necessarily makes things worse. But there's both of those systems have a lot of vestigial cruft. That's part of the issue as well. But although as does iOS and macOS, there's so much vestigial cruft just in and of itself, despite it being a whole widget company that.
Well, yeah, but that's one of the reasons why Apple's been pulling little used features out of macOS in particular. I mean, that's the justification. It's like, 1%, 0.5%, 2%, 5% of the customer base uses this. Let's pull it.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of, reasoning through a fallacy, right? Because...
I personally agree, yes. Yeah. I
I don't know. Yeah, if we get down to lowest common denominator, at some point we'll just have a web browser and iMessages and nothing else on the operating system, right?
I've got a story for you. I don't think you've heard this story. Do you know who Bud Tribble is?
I do know who Bud Tribble is.
Great guy. Did you ever meet him?
No, never met him personally. I've read about him.
As magnificent a human being as they're probably, among the greatest of the great, unsung, still at Apple all this time. Came back. Actually, he might have come back to Apple with Steve. And a truly gracious and amazing human being who's done more, in probably any 6 months of his life than I've done with my entire life. And I was talking to him one day.
He's married to Susan Barnes.
Oh, really?
I did not know that. I just saw it on Wikipedia. I'm like, get out. That's a small world. Huh. I did not know that either. I mean, assuming it's correct on Wikipedia, right?
So to say that I admire this man is a vast understatement. And I got into an argument with him because he's the one who pulled out Command D for don't save in Mail, because Steve had tasked him with pulling out features that aren't used. And he ended up walking away from me. I made this extraordinary individual so annoyed that he walked away from me. And this thing of pulling out unused features to make macOS leaner has been started under Steve, and it's been going on and on and on, and they keep pulling out these things that are back to my Mac has been my recent target. And as amazing a feature as there is, and it was pulled out probably because not very many people used it, but the people that did use it loved it. Don't pull it out.
Well, and it kind of goes against some of the own ethos that Jobs and Ives espouse. Remember back with the gooseneck iMac, you let the thing be itself, right? Everything needs to be itself. And as much as they say that, we shouldn't have all these toaster fridges, seems an awful lot like they're trying to turn the Mac into, in this case, an iPhone toaster fridge, right? Like the lowest common denominator becomes between the two, and the Mac always loses out.
The Mac always does seem to lose it out. I mean, we've gotten some fixes with that, with some of the stock app or Apple News. Like, why did it take so long for Apple News to come to the Mac? But
no weather app. There's still no weather app.
Yeah, but okay, yeah, fair enough. But it's so much easier to get weather on a browser on a Mac than it is getting it in a browser on an iPhone.
I hear you. Yeah,
and a third party could make a weather app. Right.
Well, if we're going by that, and there are plenty of weather apps that have been made. But anyway.
Yeah, I see your point. I concede your point. Are you have you been struck dumb by me?
No, I mean, there's no joy in that victory because you're not opponing it, being an opponent to it. So. I'm going to dance quite the little jig when you finally come all the way over and concede on the deep pipeline. Oh, that's going to be a happy day. If you think I'm intolerable now, just wait for that day to come. Anyway. I mean, the Mac, like I said, seems to be on the losing end. And there's a bit of hypocrisy on a whole number of fronts there. As to how they're incorporating features. I'm not sure. Anyway, I think this was a long-winded conversation to say, I'm not sure the split where the kind of conglomeration of
division model
of division models solves any of these problems. I guess the lesser evil, if you believe in the whole widget, is the conglomeration. But my fear is that we may be holding on to something that can't be held on to, that was only achievable with the kind of person that Steve Jobs was, to yank and bend to his will anything he wanted within the company. And Tim Cook is not that guy. I don't believe that at all. And I'm not sure who that guy could be.
But there's another problem with that, John, one that we haven't
even
touched on. Mm-hmm. So an issue with Apple is how much money it makes. Issue with Wall Street standpoint, like, what does Apple do with that money? And, you know, most companies buy other companies. They buy market share, they buy product lines, they buy income streams. Apple has more or less not done that. And if like Steve's part of Steve's genius was his hyper focus. And, like, you know, for instance, going down to that original four product grid in the first place and throwing out everything else, regardless of its merits, if it wasn't in service to the sharpened, focused vision that Steve had, out it went. And then, you know, a couple of new products were brought in for sure, like the iPod, eventually the iPhone, and the iPad. All those were under Steve and whatnot. But it was still an extraordinarily narrow focus. And,
well, to be fair there, he didn't create new categories. He still had the same two categories, which was consumer and professional. He created new types of products, right? The iPod was a whole new type of product. And you could have a pro iPod and a consumer iPod, right? They shouldn't necessarily be limited to just laptops and desktops, right?
Yeah, but so like if Apple was making, like, Steve would not have been the person to lead Apple that makes 100 different products, because his genius was in that focus and in finding the 5% of things that everybody else misses in just a few products.
Yeah.
So if my point here is that what you're talking about, like if the whole Wall Street wants Apple to grow, as long as Apple is public, Apple needs to pay attention to that. And that becomes a very interesting conundrum when we're talking about the kind of leadership necessary for a whole widget model.
Yeah, I guess. I'm not sure that Steve would have paid nearly as much attention to Wall Street as Tim. I think, quite honestly, he would have been very not giving a darn about it.
Well, he always, Steve always said, we'll take care of the products, and the stock will take care of itself.
Yeah, the thing is, he actually believed that. Tim Cook also says it, but his behavior is not that way. And it brings up an interesting question, kind of what you were just talking about, which is they've reinvested somewhere between $200 to $300 billion in themselves. And in hindsight, I don't think that's helped the stock price.
Well, we don't know. Maybe the stock price would be a crap ton lower if Apple hadn't done that.
Well, let me put it this way. It couldn't, you know, $300 billion, its P to E currently is like 11. Like, if it was $300 billion less, would it have been a few points more? The question is, if they took that $300 billion and bought Tesla and Netflix, and heck, they could have probably bought Google at some point for the $300 billion, I think almost certainly their stock price would have been higher than it is now. Would that have let them make better products? Almost certainly no, unless maybe with the exception of if there's that deep pipeline hope you have of the car system thing, right? So, you know, was it a good expense of money from a stockholder standpoint? My suspicion is no. From the standpoint where they control more and more of themselves over time, I mean, if they keep doing this in another, you know, 10 years, they've kind of bought out all the existing shares, and they could have eventually, you know, vote to take themselves private if they wanted, and I don't know, maybe that's their ultimate goal in some weird way, but I don't know that it's helped them on the stock side.
the danger, like a lot of people advocate that, and it would give the company enormous freedom. They wouldn't have to report anything to anyone, yeah, and blah, blah, blah. But the dangling stock options in front of employees is a tremendous recruiting tool.
Yeah.
And and that is extraordinarily important in a market where everybody else is doing that, unless you're going to start paying people $1 million, $2 million a year. But even if you're paying people $1 million, $2 million a year, that can't turn into $10 million in 6 years.
Well, you know, there are private companies that give shares, and but they have such a high stream of revenue that they understand that that stream is actually very valuable, and it can be used for recruiting. Apple is one of the few companies, at least at its current revenue levels, where that would be the case. Because if you could imagine, instead of all the buybacks, if the shares produced dividends, which are very high right now, they're probably around over 2%. In the payback, but now you don't have to pay the broader pool. So it's just people within the company. So all of a sudden you could be getting crazy amounts of revenue share through that. But I think with the rare exceptions that of private companies like that, you're absolutely right. It's a story that you have to tell to recruit that a lot of people don't want to hear versus here's some options that they easily understand.
Right.
Anyway, I could have that money been spent better to help innovation in some way? And I don't know. I mean, it depends on the nature of the person. I think it could have if you had a different type of CEO in there.
This is way too late for me to throw this out there. This is way too late in the show for me to throw this out there. But the question is, are there limits to the kind of genius that Steve Jobs brought to the table? Are there limits in scaling? And unfortunately, we don't get to find out. Or we are finding out. One of the two.
I think the answer is I don't know that we would have reached the limits, because if you look at a guy like Elon Musk, who may be actually more capable than Steve, he's running very different companies with insane targets. He really wants to build not just a colony, a city on Mars, right? Like maybe by sheer force of will, he might achieve it. So who knows what Steve would have done? Steve's appetite for this type of stuff was not insignificant, right? He's basically put a crick in the neck of almost every human being on Earth. You could see that he may have, I could see him having gone to even greater vistas. I think one thing that is very clear, and I don't think people have credited Steve for this, but Steve Jobs is responsible for the first cyborgs on Earth. And that is all of us. We are cyborgs. Absolutely. With our phones, they are an enhancement to us. It's not actually, under our flesh.
It's not under our flesh, man. We're not cyborgs yet.
Well,
but we're headed there. And he took us closer.
It's a preliminary step, and a lot of people feel like without it, they can't live the life that they enjoy. There was a Wired article recently, and someone that went to a flip phone, and they talked all about how everyone kind of loves the virtue signal, how, oh, we got to get rid of these things, they're awful. But in reality, his life is better with it, and went back to it, and he does feel like this is like a very early form of kind of our being cyborg. If you're being pedantic, yes, it's not under our skin, so it's not that, but I think the general vibe that and gist of that is true. It's augmented us in a very profound way, and it's on our person such a huge proportion of the time that it's perhaps the earliest of those steps.
All right. On that note, we're way over. like I said, it was way too late for me to bring up that that topic. But sometimes needs must when the devil drives. So are you good here?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Fun talk.
Well, then I am going to do. So unprepared. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com or head over to facebook.com/groups/contextmachine. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly, the basis by Boom, recorded just for us. And that's all for this week. Thank you very much, John, for joining me, especially when you were just here last week. I appreciate it.
Thank you, my ragtime gal.
Come on, my baby.